Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listening to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 289, Kung Fu Panda 4, Po, the new fortune cookie. Welcome to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. I'm your host, Chelsea Robson.
And I'm Morgan Stradling.
We are going to go kung fu on you for the fourth time. We've only done the first episode.
Yes, we've only done the first movie on the podcast, but we've reviewed the second and the third one
on the website
in written form. Yes, and here we are. We are doing the fourth one. So we went to the press screening, and that was last night. And these are our thoughts. So, first off, I'm not going to lie. It's been 10 years since, or almost 10 years. 2016 is when Kung Fu Panda 3 came out. So it's been a while. And I couldn't really remember what had happened. So I had to kind of go back. So just to recap, in case you're like us, you're like, it's been a while. You know, there's the first movie has, you know, Po, who becomes the dragon warrior. Uh-huh. You know, he's this unexpected hero in a giant lumpy panda who actually has all these skills, right? And he defeats the bad guy, who is Tai Lung, right? Then in the next movie, there the bad guy, and Tai Lung is a snow leopard. In the second movie, there's another bad guy who is the white peacock. And then the third one basically is the origin story. Like, where's my family? I want to know who I'm really, my real family sort of thing, you know, right. And he goes off and discovers the panda lair, and there's a bad guy there too. I think it's the bull or,
was the bull.
So anyways,
cause they had the peacock, they had the snow leopard, and then they have the bull.
Yeah.
And those are the main ones that we met. But then there was also like random ones in this movie that they brought up that were just like, oh, remember me? I'm Chad.
So we'll talk about that and what that comes. But so this, you know, it's interesting because this movie came out. Well, before we do, let's do some backstory, some information. Directed by Mike Mitchell. Mike Mitchell is pretty interesting. He has a pretty illustrious career. He's directed quite a few things. Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, Surviving Christmas, Sky High, Shrek Forever After, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, Trolls, the Lego movie 2, the second part, and now Kung Fu Panda 4. What's interesting about him is that he has not necessarily stayed in one studio. He's prolific enough of a director that he can shift from studio to studio to studio. So, you know, he was for Shrek Forever After, he was there, and then he went over to other studios, then he came back for Trolls, then he did the Lego movie 2. So there's no bad blood with DreamWorks and him, you know, moving these other places and doing that. So he definitely has a track record. And it was written by, the screenplay was written by Jonathan Abel, Glenn Berger, and Darren Lemke. It's starring quite a few people we will talk about. It was released or will be released March 8th, 2024. And the budget, $85 million, which I appreciate. DreamWorks is doing it right, guys. We have been really harping on Disney these past few episodes. But one of the things is this budget bloat that Disney has. Disney cannot get their budgets out of control. And I don't know what sort of institutional programs and unnecessary fat that they have going on there, or if it's just, I don't know what's going on at Disney where Illumination, DreamWorks, they can get their budgets under $100 million. And Disney is always, and Pixar, within the $175 to $200 range. That's just unacceptable. It's just not going to fly because it leaves you no wiggle room to just be an okay film, which is going to happen. You're not going to have home runs all the time, right? So $85 million, that's, you know, it's still going to take a couple hundred million for them to break even after marketing costs and all these other hidden costs that we don't see.
You're still going to have to make at least $300 million to like be like, oh, this was a good film.
We're seeing a profit from this point on, right? Yeah. And this is the, obviously, let's talk about it. It's the fourth one in the franchise. And was this necessarily needed?
No.
But they did it. And so with this movie is they've really kind of set the first trilogy apart from this. Like, this feels like a second phase of the Kung Fu Panda franchise, if you will. So
we have to get new people in there, new characters, new adventures.
So the Fab Five are really the main crux of the first film. I mean, they're his buddies. And this,
well, they're not his buddy. Like, they're the antagonists.
Yes. Well, in the second and third one, obviously, they're part of the team. But yes, so, you know, they're the group. And this isn't necessarily I have a new group of friends sort of movie.
Right. No,
he has a sidekick, a buddy in this one. But it's they're like, hey, where are you? Know, this big threat is happening. What are we going to do? Oh, well, they're off on other adventures, so they're unavailable. And it's really like, we didn't want to pay Angelina Jolie and Lucy Liu and all of those other people again, because that's five that we'll have to pay. That's And plus, it's just too much. Like, at a certain point, that's what happens with these sequels, is that it continues. The cast continue to bloat so big that you don't have any more time to develop those characters, and you want to bring in new ones, obviously, so it doesn't feel stale. So I think this was smart. I think it was very, very smart. They move them aside. They make a little cameo in, you know, the dance number at the end, or fight sequence with, you know, Baby One More Time, which was an interesting choice.
I have to say, I was a fan of anytime you get Jack Black coming in there and doing a, like a...
Wait, that was Jack Black?
That was Jack Black. That's why I was like dancing along with it. I was
That's
like...
even better. I didn't even recognize that.
Yeah, no, the tail end song is a cover by Jack Black. And I'm just like, this is how you should do these films. And
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Let's just go into Jack Black. Like,
okay.
He's obviously been one of those characters, one of those voice actors that has his moment of, like, he's in everything. And, or at least he has a major, once he got Kung Fu Panda, I don't think he was really in any other like random movies. It was basically just like they probably had it in his contract. Like, no, you're ours. And so he's had these films, and he's just as a character, as a person, as an actor, he has a vibe that really follows well. And Well, he was in Mario Brothers as
Bowser.
Bowser. So I can't say that
I think that would be very untraditional to lock someone in for a role. Like, you can't do any roles.
Yeah.
Like, you can only do our animated characters. I think.
I mean, it may be during the trilogy.
I don't think so. Really? I don't think that's really how it works. But I think, nonetheless, I don't think his star power was more 2000s, mid 2000s. You know, he hasn't done he hasn't really been as big of a force in the like 2010s or the late 2010s, 2020s as he was earlier, which is fine. You know, whatever. He's still funny. He's great. Bowser. Yeah. He was hilarious. Yeah. Anytime you get him singing, like it's
another level.
Yes.
And so that's why I was really happy with that. That he had that little thing. And I think it's funny that you didn't realize that it was.
I didn't think, I honestly, it didn't sound like Jack Black to me. It sounded kind of like him, but for the first little bit, I'm like, did they replace him?
I mean, he is older.
Did they just move on with his franchise? And I think part of it is Poe, or Jack Black in this movie, isn't super funny.
That is a thing.
I feel like in the other movies, he was really goofy, and it was the traditional Jack Black comedy sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there weren't as many of those moments in this, and it was just kind of more of a acting delivery, deliver the script sort of role.
Well, and they're also trying to shift him from being the dragon warrior goofy to the guy who makes all of the quotes, you know, or just like the psychological guide. And I'm right. Like, I really don't see him as that. And so I understand why throughout the movie, he's like, that's not my place.
So here's the plot for those who haven't seen it or want a recap. Basically, you know, life is moving as usual mm-hmm. in this place where they live. And
the Valley of Peace.
Is that what it's called? The Valley of Peace. And he needs to, this felt very forced to me. And this is what I didn't love. It's, you need to pick a successor. And Shifu, the little red panda, who's kind of the mentor who was passed up. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still kind of the head honcho, but Poe surpasses him by being the dragon warrior. Right. And he has this inner conflict that he's still clearly not over of Oogway not selecting him as his mm-hmm. successor. And that's really the only problem that he faces.
He really is Oogway's successor, though.
I know he is. Like, to me, if I'm picking, like,
yes. Who is the mentor in this picture? Like,
he's
that's
the mentor
you.
Who trains all the other ones, and you just happen to be the superstar, you know, who's doing your thing over on the right. side. Like, so anyways, but that's how they present it. But then he comes to him and says, hey, you need to pick a successor. Oh, and by the way, it's tomorrow and we already have these people lined up.
Right.
And but when in the first movie, when Poe was selected as the dragon warrior, that wasn't the process. Oogway didn't say, time's
yeah, we've got a pageant tomorrow.
No. Yeah. It just felt like a really forced like plot device to kick us on our journey.
Yeah.
Like, we need to set this up so that way the fox can be the person at the very end to do this. And so, you know, we just need to set this up and then they'll go on their adventure and then we'll select her at the end. Felt super forced. I'm not sure. There should have been a better way to present that. Obviously the end result is they wanted to pass the torch, mm-hmm. but it felt really forced to me, even from the very beginning when I didn't know where this was going.
Yeah. And I felt like there was a lot of that first part. It just felt very contrived and very like, okay, here's a whole bunch of information that we have to give you in order to get on the move.
Yep.
And it wasn't like a natural feeling like, this is an actual story that we're doing. And it also felt like a part of this movie is once again to reset the franchise. And so we have to get a new dragon warrior in there and we have to get a new whole thing. And
I don't know why they feel like they need to do this. They do this with, you know, Marvel, with the MCU. Why? Like, why so soon do we have to pass the torch? Like, what? Here's the thing. You've spent so much time creating this one character that you know and love, yet you can't just create something else.
Yeah.
Like, we have to replace. This is what they always want to do. They want to replace it with something else and then assume that you're going to be fine. You're going to love the new Captain America.
Right.
You know, because we told you he's the new Captain America.
Yeah.
You know, and no one likes it. No one appreciates it because you don't have those connections there. It feels super forced. You're like,
we want to make a new group of friends. Come on.
Yeah. So it really does feel forced. And I don't feel like Poe's going away.
Yeah.
If they were to do future movies, but. It's like, why do we have to take this title away? It's kind of like Cars 3, where Lightning McQueen, like, you know, he's getting ready to retire. This is his last few races, and we're going to pass the torch to the chick, the yellow chick car.
Right.
I can't even remember her name. Ramirez, is that her name?
We're going to replace this, our male character with the female character.
Right.
And it's like, okay, so there's the Roots and Boots Rodeo is happening again. It's coming up next weekend. So if you want to go to that, let's go to that. But anyway, I was looking at it and on Thursday, so it's like all weekend long. This is how rodeos go. So on Thursday, they have the all female, all cowgirl rodeo. And that one is free if you want to bring, like canned food or something to give away. And I'm like, okay, that's fun. But at the same time, I don't go to rodeos to see cowgirls.
Right.
Like I, as a cowgirl, like would wannabe, I go for the cowboys and that's, I am unabashed. This is why I go. And that's why I go to a lot of movies too. Like, I don't need some, if I go to one of these movies, like especially like a superhero movie, if I'm going to that, I'm going because I like the character that they have. And I like men. Like, I just, there's not enough of these like good, like strong men out there. And I'm just like, come on now. And so that's one thing that bothers me is I, as a female, I'm fine with women, sure, but I don't really care. I really just don't. And I want to see something that the
men have broad appeal. And as much as you want to force that it's not because you're mad about it, it's just the way women are appealed. Women are drawn to men and men are drawn to men in the fact that, as far as a sports and a spectator thing, they are physically superior, stronger in all ways, shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
We don't need to be mad about it. It is. We are built differently. That's fine. And so that's why when you go to a rodeo, the feats that men are able to do are significantly more impressive than the women simply because of how their bodies are made.
Well, it's not even just that. It's like, I'm attracted to them. I want to see like good looking men. And that's one of the things they just end up like all of these, like I'm specifically talking about the MCU right now, how they've just moved all of the male characters out in for women. And I'm like, I really just don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem is you're assuming that the popularity and the things that drew into the main character are just automatically going to translate to a new character, which we have not found to be the case. So anyway,
with the Kung Fu Panda, they have decided to like reset this and move it in. And the moment that, so you have this little fox that like enters in and starts trying to steal stuff from Po, and he's like, what is going on? And so the moment she starts talking, like it's obviously Awkwafina because her voice is just so distinct. Both of us look at each other like, oh my gosh.
No, not her. Yeah.
It's been one of those things that she's just been in so many things. I have nothing against her personally, but I just feel like
she's the Chris Pratt but not Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt, I mean, is Chris Pratt and he's like the leading guy. It's as if Gilbert Gottfried was in everything, where you have this really harsh sort of voice. Yes. And that's what Awkwafina has. And that's what makes her different. She's like this kooky, quirky girl who has kind of a
yes.
Right. And that's kind of her, like, I'm saying specifically that because in the Little Mermaid remake, which I never saw, there was that stupid song.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that's her voice to me, right?
Yeah.
And so when I get why they want her.
I'm giving off very Awkwafina vibes today, by the way.
She's, you know, popular and she has this kooky character and voice and yeah, she's a great actress for that reason. But I'm getting Awkwafina fatigue, and it's been for a long time that I've had Awkwafina fatigue. So as soon as I heard her, I was like, ugh. Of course it's Awkwafina.
Of course
it's Awkwafina. Why, of course, who else would it be? You know, after the initial shock of it being Awkwafina, eventually I kind of got over it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
One thing that I did appreciate, though, is they didn't like harp on the fact that it was a woman taking over. Like it didn't throw any kind of like.
No, I don't think initially that's where you thought it was going. Like, oh, the female's going to take over. But like, I didn't feel that way when it was Angelina Jolie's character with Tigress.
No. Yeah.
Or I don't feel like they're kind of forcing that women take over the men vibe in these movies.
Yeah.
No, I think you're just really prickly to it. Like,
you're
really like on edge about
it. Because this has been like.
Disney
has done this with everything, and they've made it a point to be like, I am.
You
woman
will
here.
Like Brie Larson.
Yes.
You will like Ms. Marvel, even though she's really detestable and not a great character.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm on edge because of these things. And I'm sorry that DreamWorks has to deal with the fact that everybody is now on edge because Disney has been, you know, spoiling the pot. But yeah, I think that as the whole story went, like she as a character wasn't some. She didn't bother me. It just felt like if you're going to reset a franchise, I feel like it would be better to reset it off of a character that was kind of like a runaway character from a previous. So for example, if you're looking at, the penguins from Madagascar, like they got their own spinoff because they were popular.
Mm-hmm.
Puss in Boots. Yes. Mm-hmm. Even though Puss in Boots, the original was not great. The second one, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So
we still talk about it.
We still talk about this. But I just feel like there's not enough like just throw in a new character that we have to kind of throw into. It's like, okay, why not give Angelina Jolie?
Why couldn't it finally be Tigress? And that was her story arc that, hey, you need it not now, but wait.
Exactly.
Which is what happens a lot of times in life.
Yeah. So
and that would have been really satisfying. She already has like a fan base.
Yeah.
We know and love her, that character. Yeah. I liked her a lot. So Zem was an interesting character. I liked the way that she was introduced, that she was this bandit who was trying to steal things. You know, ultimately, we realized that that was just a ruse to get in with Poe and to become his sidekick. You know, he puts her in jail, and then she starts spilling info about the chameleon.
Ah, yes. Who happens to know way too much about this chameleon.
Yes, exactly. She knows everything. And, you know, it's so funny. They had this joke like, wow, I am really regional, am I? Which is so true. Sometimes you think about it. You know, they make it seem like these characters are like the biggest, baddest in the world. Everyone knows them. And then in the next movie, it's like, well, dang it. We need someone else who's even better. Like, well, just have them go over the mountain over there. And that's where the chameleon, you know, she lives in this other area, this other city in, far away. And, you know, she's the next big thing and she's going to take over. And whoo.
Well, which was funny. Okay. So the very first scene was very Mulan. And like it was like carbon copy. It's not total carbon copy, but like, it's pretty.
How are we going to introduce this new villain and their threat level?
Right. And it was basically a Mulan scene of like him coming in and destroying all these different things. And then it's like, you have this, I thought that was actually weird though, because it did have him as, or it did have the Snow Leopard as seemingly the baddie again.
And which I was like, we're doing this again where we bring back the guy we've already killed.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. Thank goodness. I did notice something was different. He had this scaly skin. So I was like, oh, he's regenerated in some sort of way. Uh-huh. He's found some way to come back out of the spirit realm. And now he has this weird scale texture and it turns to come out.
Turns out,
it's the chameleon who is able to shapeshift into other people and beings, but she kind of keeps her lizard-like texture.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was just kind of weird how they did that, because it was just like, oh, obviously it's the chameleon. Like, there was no like trying to figure out who it was. It was just like this rabbit or fox just happens to know all the information I need in the moment. And so it's like, it's just not a very well drawn out, like, introduction to the whole story. I felt it was like every part of it.
Plot dump, plot dump, plot dump, plot dump. And we're on our adventure. We're going to go from there.
Right.
Well, even at the end when they're fighting the chameleon, it feels very contained. Like, she's in her little fortress and that's the only threat level. I mean, and they did say with this villain, they wanted her to be more of a brainiac, cerebral villain versus Braun, which we see, you know, she doesn't have the capability to know Kung Fu. And that's why she steals everyone's powers and literally brings them back from the dead in a way and takes their life, their Kung Fu force.
Viola Davis as the chameleon, though.
Great.
Fantastic.
Amazing. I loved her. I thought she was fantastic. She gave me very much like a mix of Yzma with a little sprinkle of Dolores Umbridge from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Her, just that wicked smile that she had. Perfect villain. I thought she was great. And I loved the dynamic because she's so small. You know, she'd appear very large when it was just her on screen. But then when Shen would appear next to her, you realize how small she was. And the fox herself is very small. But then when Poe was next to her, it was like, wow, I just really liked the different just angles that we're able to see and perspectives. Because whenever she was on screen, for the most part, she felt very intimidating and large.
Yeah.
When in reality, when placed with the other people, stature-wise, she's very small in stature.
Yes, yes. I liked the villain. I
did.
It was like,
I loved
job.
Her design. Uh-huh. I loved who she was. I've also a little Rango vibes, obviously, because Rango is, I just thought that was great. I loved everything about her. The golden crown that she was wearing, the way that she transformed. I liked her best as herself. I didn't, you know, when she transformed into other things, I didn't love it as much, but it was a fun power. But they go on this adventure and it's just kind of point A to point B. There is a stop at the Snuggly Duckling along the way, to kind of break it up. But, and then the whole, you know, everything kind of happens in her fortress and it just felt a little, I don't know. It's like, why did he feel she was such a threat? I'm having a hard time even remembering what was so
Well, because
threatening about her that he had to go out and go.
Because she comes in and she destroys this.
Oh, the quarry.
The quarry. And so you have all of these rams coming up and being like, hey,
yeah,
she
yeah.
destroyed our quarry and she's going to, or he is going to destroy everything. But it's like, once again, it's like, what? How is he back? I thought he was.
Yes. Yeah. Because they thought it was.
But once again, and it's like, then it just happens to be the fox. They're like, oh, no, it's not that actually. It's just spaghetti thrown together. You know, it was just like, this is how it goes, you know?
Yeah. And going back to Shen as her arc as a character, you know, she's this bandit, she's taking over, she goes in jail and he's like, oh, wait, you know something that I need. Maybe I can lighten your sentence if you help me.
Right.
And so immediately she hops on board. And as I was watching this, I thought it was odd that she never had any moments of trying to deflect
or trying to get away,
deceive or steal or kind of go back to her other ways. Like immediately she was on board. And then I even thought like, it'd be really interesting if she actually worked for the villain and or turned against Poe at some point. Mm-hmm. And that does happen.
Yeah.
She's trying to steal the staff that was given to him by Oogway. And the only way that you can own it is if it is freely given. And so that's a problem. And then at the very, very end, he's in a tight bind, needs to get out of this cage. He does give it to her. And in that moment, she turns and gives it to the chameleon.
Right.
And so then that all made sense. But I still felt, to kind of make it feel a little more realistic, maybe to have a few moments of her going back to her, just a little sneakiness. I don't know. Maybe they wanted this like total the Hans moment where there's no clues throughout. And then suddenly, you know, in an instant it's revealed. And that's really what they did. So it did make sense in the end, but thinking through, I did have these questions of like, she's going along a little too easily. I may be the only person who thought that.
Well, especially because you start out as her being somebody stealing.
So deceitful. Yes.
Yeah. And so you're expecting there to be some kind of continuation of this thread. And she does have moments of that. It's like, oh, you mean you're just going to give that to me out of the goodness of your heart? Like what?
Yeah.
And okay. So that changes things. She's weird.
She's an orphan and she has this, you know, she had to grow up on the streets. We get a backstory of her, how her life was hard and she had to,
steal. It's okay to steal.
Therefore it's okay to steal because you're poor, which again, that's not the case. That's not the way. We're not Aladdin. No.
Right.
But that's how she gets along. And then she's gets basically plucked out by the chameleon who sees that she has no fear, you know, when confronted by bad situations. And so she kind of grooms her and trains her to be her apprentice and to do her bidding and her dirty work and ultimately sends her on this adventure to go get this from Poe. So she definitely, and then she turns around, she has a change of heart because she's become friends with Poe and has a relationship with Poe and really sees him for the goodness that he is and everything that he represents. And she has a great story arc. Poe does not.
He's very
static. What happens to Poe? What growth does he go on other than the beginning? You need to choose a mentor. And then as soon as he goes on the adventure, like he's not constantly thinking about like, I need to think of this person or what should I do? My legacy. Or even in Cars 3, I feel like Lightning McQueen was still kind of thinking about his legacy how that affected him. And Poe has none of that. It was like, again, it was these two plot points at the beginning and the end. They wanted the bookend. And it has no relevance to the story, to the journey. Only the very, very end when it's all wrapped up in a nice bow and the villain is defeated, where he's like, hey, you can be the successor. You have proven thyself worthy.
Right.
And so I honestly, what else happened to Poe throughout the journey?
I mean, he was supposed to come up with new little little sayings of inspiration.
Skadoosh, and it's like, that was it.
I mean, he doesn't. It's like,
he has to be the fortune cookie. It's like, come on. No. Yeah.
Yes. His new job is to become the fortune cookie. And I'm just not like it. It's just, it's weird. Uh-huh. Like it's very forced. And then the other thing that was really forced was the whole my two dads thing.
Yes.
Like we understand that he has his biological father and he has his adopted father, but it's like, they really tried to hone in on my two dads.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, once would have been fine. Okay, cool.
Right. It would have been funny.
Yeah.
But then they kept saying it again and again. Like they were really trying to make a point without making a point because they knew because it was, oh no, what are you talking about? I mean, it's a biological dad and an adoptive dad. Like, what are you looking into this too hard?
Right,
you
know? Right, right.
But it's because it happened so many times. It was like,
a lot of times. I understand.
It was weird. It was unnecessary. So let's go into that. The two dads.
Their whole story was unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary. Could have been cut. It's because they cut the Fab Five. So we didn't have these ancillary characters,
right,
to really fill the time. And so the dads, which is so weird to me, is they go on an adventure. Mr. Ping, the goose dad, is worried about Poe. And then Li Shan, the panda dad, is worried about Poe. Mm-hmm. And they're both simultaneously stressed about him going on this new adventure. And then they go on, they end up realizing that they're leaving in the middle of the night and join together to go save. What was their point there? They were trying to save Poe, and that never made sense to me.
Both of them, they're in his restaurant, mm-hmm, and he's like, oh no, he's fine. He does this all the time. This is what he does.
Yeah.
And so that was a weird thing because he's like, yeah, he was going, like, what made this person different?
He has gone on so many adventures and defeated so many major bad guys in previous films that we have seen. I'm sure there's been other adventures that we haven't. Why in this very instance is suddenly they're so stressed out about him that,
right,
that they think they're going to help and fix it and save him? It felt so forced. It felt so dumb. Was it just an excuse to say, oh, the two dads go on an adventure?
And that's the problem.
But I didn't feel like they even grew together as like buddies.
No. It wasn't like they had to overcome anything.
They didn't help each other or overcome any trials. There were a few moments where, you know, oh, I'm climbing on a cliff and oh, it's really scary. And
right. And so it's like you have a lot of these like little gags.
Uh-huh.
Like we need another set of characters to do little gags. Because Poe's not funny.
So. No, he's not funny anymore. And they could have used the street rats, the underbelly of the city bad guys that
they
were also introduced.
More.
Maybe we should have got them to their city first instead of stopping at the Snuggly Duckling, and maybe fleshed out those characters a little bit more. Because the two dads weren't doing it for me. Their storyline was total fluff.
And it wasn't.
And filler. And this movie was very short. It's 94 minutes long.
Yeah.
It feels 94 minutes in a good way. It wraps up pretty quick. And I'm like, oh, good. Okay. It wasn't here for 2 hours. Just, you know, beating a dead horse with a movie that didn't need to be unnecessarily long. So they didn't do that. It was great.
We're going really into all these details. And I have to say, like, at the end, I liked the movie. Like, it may seem like we hated
this
movie.
Yes, it's true. It's true. I guess we should say that.
I actually liked it. I felt like it was a fun little 93 minutes, little thing to take your kids on. Okay.
I absolutely would take my kids to this.
I think the kids would
enjoy
it.
Have a fun time. They'd think it's fun. They'd like the characters. Right. But I think the hallmark of a truly great film is if the adults in the audience can really resonate with it and leave enjoying what they saw. And we saw one of your friends afterwards who came up to us and he was like, it was okay. It was no Puss in Boots 2. And I think that just goes to show how incredible Puss in Boots 2 was.
It was amazing.
That it wasn't, you'd think Puss in Boots 2, like, oh, what a gag movie. Like, you know, this off character about a little pussy cat that has cute eyes. Right. But it resonated with so many people and it was fantastic. And this was not that, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be that. It's going to be great. It's coming out during spring break. I'm sure it's going to do. There's really no other competition at this time. It's going to do very well, I think
so.
Especially it's an established franchise. It's just not necessarily going to be one that I, like the 2 and 3, ever really need to watch again.
Yeah, I agree.
So one thing I do want to talk about relating to DreamWorks, you know, this is the fourth movie in this franchise.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that here DreamWorks can do Kung Fu Panda 4. And I didn't necessarily roll my eyes about it or groan too much. Whereas if Disney would have announced Frozen 4 or something, I would have had a major fit. And it's just interesting.
You did have a major fit.
Well, they've announced 3. Have they announced 3 and 4 together back to back?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes, I did have major fit then.
No, they're doing up to 5.
Stop it, Disney. Okay, see? No.
Yes.
That's the thing. It's just interesting. The different quality that the studios have in my mind, or their places where Disney to
DreamWorks
me was always
just so much better right now.
They have Disney has this creative, typically was this very creative, unique studio where they were the ones to go for the new properties, even if it was adapted or based on something, they have these original films and very rarely would they go to the sequel. Well, if they did, it was relegated to direct to video. And then very few times would they allow something to be an actual sequel that was released as part of the Disney canon.
Mm-hmm.
And now Disney and obviously Pixar is just the sequel pout machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a disaster. They are creatively bankrupt and it's really disappointing. Whereas DreamWorks does the total opposite.
Yeah.
They have Shrek 4. Wait, is there a Shrek 4? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have Shrek 4. I'm trying to think. There's one that's being announced. Like I couldn't remember.
They have gone to the sequel well
so many times before. And it's fine. I'm totally fine with it for some reason. And I think, I don't know. It's just the studios to hold different places in my mind where I'm okay if DreamWorks does this, but I'm not okay if Disney does it.
Well, I feel like we've had Bad Guys and even...
They still do original films. Yeah.
But I mean, even though Puss in Boots was a sequel, it was its own thing.
Mm-hmm. I think because Disney has the almost 100-year history of the studio. I mean, not necessarily Walt Disney Animation. I mean, that's been around as far as the Alice shorts and whatnot, but the actual, you know, Snow White, that was, you know, later. But they have so many decades of unique film, unique film, unique film, unique film. It's obviously because Walt was involved and then the studio, that's just what they did. And DreamWorks really has only been around little over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to establish themselves how they wanted. And it was in the sequel era where that was kind of, this had become more of a norm, something to do. Anyway, just interesting thought. I don't discredit DreamWorks not any less. They're just different to me. They're different in my mind and that's okay. And DreamWorks is, if I were to pick between the two, like, hey, here's the new Disney film.
They're just more
unnamed,
consistent.
You don't know what it is. Here's the new DreamWorks film, unnamed, you don't know what it is. Which one would you see? I'd pick DreamWorks.
Right now, yeah. They're way more consistent to me. And like, I just feel like they haven't gotten rid of like their good talent, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a major part too. So for example, as we're looking at the credits rolling by, I noticed one name that has been on the Rotoscopers interview list. Christopher Knights is on there. And ironically, it was episode 89 and when Mason was able to.
Oh,
so
hey.
Now we're 200 episodes later and I'm noticing, hey, it's Christopher Knights. But he's such a nice man. And he was the annoyed Komodo. I was like, that's funny. But I just feel like they were able to keep some of their really great talent around, and they have right now, there's more of a respect for like the history of themselves, I guess. And I don't feel like, even though this is a fourth movie, I don't feel like Kung Fu Panda 4 was necessarily they could have done better. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like they did anything wrong with any of the characters.
Right.
So I was like, all right, that's cool. It's a continuation of the story and he's an adventure type story, like character. And so he's going to, and so I just feel like they've really been able to maintain a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I've respected that for them on their behalf.
Nice. So any other thoughts on this? I mean, one thing we didn't really talk about is that she brings back all of these former Kung Fu masters, and some we've seen before. Obviously any of the villains from the previous films return, and she takes their powers, or they're taking their powers, but it's like they all have this like one special move that she highlights. Mm-hmm. And then, so they're all just taken back. And what I thought was strange is that these are like the villains. These are the bad guys. They would do nothing more than want to come back into the real world.
Right.
And they come back in the real world and they just kind of like are just,
I guess,
like hanging out
they've
in the
accepted
cages.
They've accepted that
they've moved on. Maybe the spirit world, once you're there, you're like, no, like this is where I need to be. But they're almost these agnostic sort of characters where they're neither bad nor good anymore. They just are. Like, I was this bad person, but and so I was just really surprised that they didn't try to escape. Like, I feel like that would have been an extra level of threat. Instead of filling all this fluff in the middle, we could have had this action scene be much longer at the end, where in the midst of all this, they escape and it creates even more chaos where we're having to contain them and put them back, because they ultimately do want to find, you know, get back in the real world and create terror and havoc and become Kung Fu masters again.
Right.
But then at the very end, they just kind of happily drift back into the old world. You know, the spirit world. It just seemed very interesting that they're like,
fine, we get to go back. All right.
See ya. And then even the Snow Leopard character, you'd think he'd be so angry and bitter and have all this animosity towards Po. And he really doesn't. Like, he's just like, I respect you, Kung Fu Master. And he's grown up.
I don't know. Is this like a commentary? Because the thing is, anytime that you bring in a subject like the afterlife, the spirit world or whatever, it's like you are commenting on like these ideas, these themes that have been commented on for the entirety of human existence.
Yeah, exactly.
And so for you to think, like, we're just not going to go into that. We're just going to, like, let it be as it is.
It's, I think,
like,
I, again, like, for the kids movie, the kids, it was fine. Yeah. For me, when I'm, again, I'm probably the only person who dug this deep into thinking about,
like, I was digging this
why
deep.
Weren't they mad that he had to go back, you know?
Well, yeah, it was like they had no, it was just like there was no morality in it of, like, they weren't sorry for anything they did.
No, they weren't sorry for what
agnostic is exactly the word.
They weren't bitter. They weren't angry that
they,
like,
just
they,
like,
had,
this is how
this
it
was
is.
The fate that they had to
and it's like
have.
We all go to the, like, we'll see you in the spirit world too, you know. It's like so what are you doing over there?
Realm, yeah, is what they, like, called it.
Like, you're just gonna, like, sit around and, you know, play dominoes? Like, what are you doing? And then they end up bringing the chameleon with them into the spirit world. And or spiller realm or whatever, and it's like, and she's the one fighting, like, doesn't want to go in there, but it's mm-hmm. like, so you're just killing her, but, like, what's gonna happen to her now? Like, mm-hmm. she still has mm-hmm. her body, she's still right. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah,
there's so many things, and especially if you are a religious person in any way, or even if you're not even religious, if you're just a person that thinks about, you know, next steps,
yeah.
at all,
yeah.
you're going to be really annoyed.
I don't know. I don't think as a religious person, I didn't come away with it like, oh, it was this commentary on the afterlife.
It was a lack of commentary is what I'm saying.
I wasn't expecting, I liked, it was totally fine mm-hmm. that it was. I was just expecting the characters to be a little bit more true to themselves
yeah.
as their human characters, like, or not human, but, you know,
like, what has
earthly
this,
characters.
But the fact that they were different means that the spirit realm did something to them. So what does it do?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, so it's the lack of digging into these things that I'm like, come on, give me something to like understand.
I
here.
Just wanted them to break out and try to escape. I feel like that really just would have created an extra level of chaos. It would have thrown
it
her
really
for a loop.
Though.
Yeah. So, all right. We liked this movie. I know it doesn't seem like we did, but it was really enjoyable. It was a lot of fun. I thought the animation was great. They kind of had a different style.
It was beautiful.
They didn't try to copy the Puss in Boots, you know, right. the frame rate thing during the fight scenes, which I feel like, and they did that in Bad Guys too.
Yeah.
It can get a bit old.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm glad they didn't do that. Keep that for very special occasions. There was a little bit of anime influence in some of, like, the kind of the graphic novel design uh-huh. when the, like, battle and, like,
right.
whatever. I thought that was really fun. It was different. It was unique. Animation's beautiful. There's really they're tip top. $85 million budget. You know,
yeah.
you can have a great looking film with a decent story. You know, for $85 million, I think because this is a film that's number four in the franchise. It has an established fan base or just knowledge. Like, you know what you're getting into with these films
yeah.
where it's not like
the member berries,
like Illuminations. Yes. That's one thing is, like, if you know South Park, there's something called member berries where remember this.
They're just, so fun
they're just
and happy.
Dangling member berries. And that's totally what this was with all the bad guys coming back, mm-hmm. you know, just remember this. But yeah, you know what you're getting into with these films versus, let's say, Illuminations Migration. We didn't see that. My kids want to see it. And if it's still in theaters during spring break, we will see it. It's basically like a duck movie about ducks that migrate. Came out during Christmas. It might still be in theaters.
I did see it
but
in
like
theaters.
That is
still.
A total unknown. And we didn't see it because we didn't know. But like
yeah.
this one, like, I know. So I'm going to take them. So
right.
ultimately, this movie was good. I'm going to give it 3 stars. It was good, but not great. The things
yeah.
that I liked about it were probably the art style, character design, specifically Chameleon. I did like the Fox character Shen.
I felt like all
she
the voice
really
cast
cool.
was
yeah,
really
I liked
great.
Them. Like, yeah, I mean, I got over my Awkwafina
right.
angst.
it was just the initial moment of like,
yeah.
here we are.
Here, like, of course it's her. Yep.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So that's
but
what I would
yeah,
do.
I felt like she had there were every character was a level 3 passing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody passed. There wasn't a fail. I don't think there was anything that failed in this.
Right.
The music was fun. I liked hearing little, you know, themes here and there. And then as well as the Jack Black cameo at the end of his
classic.
Cover
yeah.
was great. And then I was listening through, like, even Bryan Cranston as the dad,
the biological dad.
Yes. The panda dad. I just felt like the entire voice cast was just very good. And all of their every way they say it, their words, uh-huh. like, mm-hmm. it was just like, you guys are very, you all are good at what you do. And I'm glad that that was one of those things. It's like everybody was, did a great job. I felt like, there were a lot of those moments where I was like, okay, this was just sloppy. Mm-hmm. It was just sloppy, different parts of it, which would have taken it, you know, if it wasn't sloppy, I definitely would have given it a 4. Yeah. Maybe even up to a 5, depending on, you know, how, if they would have changed a couple things, if they would have had the, you know, the big baddie, like at the end where everybody escapes, you know, added a little bit more to it.
I think even just having Tigress there.
Yeah.
Just ignore the other Fab Five. Just have Tigress and this Fox character.
For sure.
Skip the dads and have these two battle it out. Maybe as to who, maybe he's like, I don't know. That would be too confusing. Like, no, he's debating between Tigress and then this newcomer that like wasn't even on his radar.
I think they should have just given Tigress.
Yeah.
The...
She should have joined along, and maybe this girl could join the crew as a understudy, if you will, a little Padawan. But right. And then ultimately it was like, this is your time. You have proven yourself. She does skadoosh at the end.
Right.
But we don't get that. But
I definitely would have liked this better if it had been bringing Tigress in and continuing her story.
How much bigger of a budget if we were to bring all five of those characters? It'd probably be another 15 million. Five, I don't know.
You could have taken.
We could have had at least just one, but
And I think she would have done a great job.
I like her. So one side note before we end, a funny thing I did enjoy was the inner monologue.
Oh yeah.
Character. So where, you know, he's sitting there, he's trying to peace
have
out.
Inner peace,
dinner and peace. Szechuan sauce. That was funny. And then he had all these different panda heads floating around. I thought visually those were pretty cool. And then later Shifu's doing that. And instead of his inner monologue, you know, pose there.
That was a funny moment.
I wanted more comedy out of this. And so that was another little disappointment. So I'd have to go back and see who the original writers were of the first one. But yeah, it was good. Go see it. Go support them. I like him.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let us know what your thoughts are for Kung Fu Panda 4. If you saw it, do you agree? Do you disagree? What would you rate this film? We also want to do a few more voicemail episodes, like exclusively answering voicemails, answering your questions on a variety of topics. Be sure to send those in rotoscopers.com/voicemails or give us a call. Not voicemails, voicemails.
There you go.
Voicemails or give us a call at, I've said this so many times, but I always forget.
406-646-6575.
Is that what it was? Where is it? Yes, I said it right. Yes, and you guys need to send some more voicemails, because sometimes I get a little message from our provider being like, you have not used this and we're going to shut it off in 30 days. I'm like, no! So, yes, send us some voicemails. We love them. I'd love to do an exclusive voicemail episode where we can just answer your questions. We could talk about the state of a Disney animation, or we could talk about the state of DreamWorks animation, or just the animation industry. I mean, I feel like we kind of hit on those as we do our review episodes, because we just can't help ourselves. Right. But we love it. Great. We will be bringing our member patron program back. I know someone commented on that recently. We're still working on that. We just want to get a little bit more of a cadence going with consistent episodes before we, you know, feel obligated to do that. I feel so guilty. I'm like, we haven't done this so long, and I just want to make sure you're getting everything. But we do appreciate the support in any way, shape, or form. So the best way you can do that right now is just leaving us a 5-star review and sharing the episode with your friends.
The thing is, like, both Morgan and my lives, we have just stuff.
Yeah.
And so
our time is not our own.
Yeah. The time that we do get together is a joy, and we're glad to do it. But it's hard to get to that point right now.
We will be doing
this. It's just life.
We will be doing the Super Mario Brothers movie. So stay tuned to that. And we are going to be taking some of our episodes, not necessarily the review episodes, but maybe some, we're going to take clips from our other discussion episodes and putting them on YouTube.
Oh, I thought you were
in the future, not in the past. Yes.
You know. Like, I don't want to go through those again. No. Like, what are you signing me up for?
No, little 10-minute clips, you know, we're going to put on the YouTube for different topics and a little bit more topically news-related stuff as they come up. But so stay tuned. Be sure to subscribe there. And we love your support. Thank you so much. Go check out this movie if it suits you, if you feel a hankering. It's a fun time.
Until next time. We're even together.
Even in person, and I can't get it right.
Until next time, we are the Rotoscopers. So what am I supposed to do with this red light?
So, okay. So there's two different sort of, there's the red light. That's uh-huh. when this is lit. And then there's the non-infrared, which basically is, it's still a light. Like it has, anyways, but there's no light. Watch. So it's on and it's doing the rays, but it's not a light. Right.
Okay.
And then you could, so anyways, you just do both, right?
Okay.
You get both at one time. Then you just put it on your chest like this. It'll turn off in 12 minutes. Takes 3 minutes to let it heat.
Like okay.
Power down for a second. Just not overheat. And then I would do it again. Yeah, it's okay. It's good for your face. Like
yeah.
Your skin. But you're supposed to put like little goggles on. It's very right.
For as an explanation on what I'm doing. So I have come over here to Morgan's house and she has given me her infrared light because as per normal, around whatever time of year it is, I get sick and then I end up having a permacough. And last time Morgan had a permacough, she said this worked for her.
Yes.
So here I am testing out her hippy dippy ideas. And
yes, and it worked for me. I had a permacough for 4 weeks and it was terrible. It was hacking, you know, where you're coughing up mucus every single time. And I thought, okay, it's going to go away. I just give it a few days. Like, this is normal. This is what mm-hmm. happens. And then a few days turned into a week, turned into 2 weeks, turned into 3, 4. And it just hurt my lungs to do it. Like, every single cough, it felt like I was literally hacking up a lung. Like, it was pulling it from the inner wall of the body, right? And so then I had forgotten that I got this red light for Christmas. And I was, you know, in the hullabaloo of Christmas and there's piles of stuff everywhere and you still hadn't put everything away and it just got put in a drawer. I'm like, hey, I should try that red light. And so I did. And immediately when I used the red light, it broke up the mucus. So I was still coughing, but I was coughing just a dry cough.
Okay.
For the first time, which was great. And then about 6 hours later, the mucus started coming back. So then I did it again and it broke it up immediately. So I just used it, you know, 2 to 3 times a day for a few days. And by the end of the week, cough was totally gone and never came back.
Never to return.
So if you are interested in this red light, you can go to morganstradling.com/LumiBox, LumiBox. I just have a link because I shared it with my friends and a bunch of, you know, friends signed up and it helped my sister-in-law. She had this calf muscle that she had, it just been bugging her for a long time. And she tried massage, she tried stretch, she tried ice, she tried all sorts of things. One time with the red light made the pain go away and she was healed. So the red light is just us on the wavelength of different colored light. It's a very healing light. It energizes the cells. And so maybe if you have kind of stagnant cells that are stuck and they're injured, it just kind of brings them back to life. I don't know all the science about it. If you go to that website, it'll include information all about it where you can learn. But if you have a permacough or you're struggling with stuff, look into red light therapy. And I really like this one because as Chelsea, she's has it on her chest right now. It's heavy duty.
It's
not like when you feel it, it's like, oh, this is well made. This isn't just some cheap Chinese crap, you know, that they slap a markup on. Like it's obviously a couple $100s and my link gives you a discount, significant discount. But yeah, we use it. My husband and I use it every night. We put the kids to bed and he has like a knee issue and it's been helping his knee and all sorts of things. It's great. So sorry, this isn't sponsored by LumiBox. No, but I wish I do have an affiliate code. I'd appreciate if you use it. If you're interested, cool. If you're not, now, you know, you learned a little bit more about red lights. So there we go.
There we go. So as we're talking throughout this episode, that's basically just me.
That's not going to be a blooper.
That is a blooper.
Okay. I was pulling this up too, just to read quickly on.
I have it like under my chin and I'm like, I don't know how to explain.
Oh yeah.
If
you're sick, I put it on my lymph nodes and it helps. Like if you feel a cold coming on, I feel a song coming on with me. It's like, I feel a cold coming on.
Gosh.
You know, the lymph nodes are getting a little like when you swallow. And so I'll put on the lymph nodes and multiple times, like it's kind of zapped it away, like prevents the cold from coming on. So
I got sick in September around my birthday, which sucks.
No, happy birthday.
Yeah, and I was sick for a really long time then. I think it was like 2 months. That was when I was like 2 months of coughing. It was ridiculous. And then I got sick again. So this was January. I don't remember. There's been 3 times in the last 6 months that I've gotten sick. And every time it ends up in this kind of like permacough. Each time it has lowered my singing range.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem is like, I'm not sure. I haven't really gone up into the higher ranges.
Yeah.
So it's like, it might still be there. I don't know. But whenever I'm singing, I now like jump the octave down.
Yeah.
And it's just like, am I just now a tenor? I don't know. And it's frustrating.
Well, let's heal you up. Let's zap that away. Get it back.
Zap.
Okay. So what episode number is this?
I like how we have current season 2022.
Oops. Yeah, you know, we know. It was time to update the files in Google Drive.
Yeah. I went on like an Instagram like, sure, I'll buy that. Sure, I'll buy that.
Right now, all I'm getting on Instagram ads are cold plunges because
you posted about it.
Yeah, I posted about it and we have a entry level cold plunge where it's not very insulated. It doesn't have a chiller. So right now it's 65 degrees, which is not, it's my cool plunge. It's you get in there and the hardest part is just dunking your whole body in. But once you're in, it's like, this is fine. It's really not that bad. Anyway, so this was our entry level one. We bought it on this thing called Nellis Auction, which a few markets have them, but it's basically like Amazon returns, Target returns. And it's an auction site where I love that you only do it for a day or two. Like the auctions aren't week long. So it's like an item is up for 24 hours and then you bid. And so you get things really cheap. Anyways, long story short, we got this for $40. And now we know, okay, we like doing the cold plunge, but the cool plunge is not doing it for us. And we want like an actual cold plunge experience. And so obviously through researching different ones now, the algorithm and all the data that has been sent over, it's like, so I have never realized there are so many of these companies, probably 20 different companies that I've been getting ads for. A lot of them are kind of variations of the same. Like you can tell they have one main supplier and they like slap their logo on it. And those are usually like the cheaper ones, but we're not going to be doing that anyway. Yes. So yeah, that's my experience with Instagram ads. So
I bought a bathing suit, which I got and I was like, meh.
That's the worst.
It's all right, but it's like I hate buying stuff on like that stuff online. So I was like, oh great. And then I bought these grounding shoes.
Oh.
That are not great.
Oh, I have grounding sandals.
So they're grounding sandals.
What are they called? Foot runners or earth runners?
Yes.
You don't like earth runners?
I don't like them.
I love them. So what size are you? I'll buy them off you.
Okay. But they're not comfortable.
Yeah.
Like I wish that they had like the sole was just at least a little bit more comfortable.
Did you get the thickest sole?
They had
different levels of, you know, to like, if you're not used to.
But it's like, all you have to do is put a penny on the bottom of your shoe.
Well, no, it has to be a penny that connects and touches your skin.
Right. So, but it's like, if you wanted to, you don't have to spend $70 in order to make this work.
Right.
And so I was like, dang it. I should have just done with this one of my old Crocs and like figured that out.
Well, now you know.
Now I know.
You could sell them on eBay.
$70. I was like,
they would definitely sell. I've been selling quite a few things on eBay.
Really? All right. I'll look at that. Now you're taking it.
I'm having a little something happening in my chest. So I'm putting the red light on right now.
What is that sound?
That is my ice maker.
Oh,
sorry. Are you using it to pick up? It's as the kids say, the bus has arrived. The passengers are getting off the bus. Uh-huh. And then all the ice cubes are in a moment. We'll go.
Oh, cute.
Kids are cute.
Kids are cute.
Wait, let's listen. No, not, it's filling the tank up. Or oh, okay. So
that's really funny.
Sorry about
the
that.
Bus is a
it's so cute. They'll like run up to it and look. They like to watch them duck down. It's fun. Never change.
Aw, that is sad. Don't change, kids.
I know.
this is a fun age for all of your kids.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag Animation Addicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.